Beer Talk. Gespräche über und beim Bier.
Hello and welcome to another episode of our podcast, Beer Talk. Today I'm very happy to welcome a longtime friend of mine. She's also a beer judge and we meet always somewhere in the world. And now it's quite funny because normally she's in the US, but now she's in Italy, so it's easy time-wise. Perfect that you are here. Welcome, M. Sauder, and maybe you say some words about yourself.
Yes, thank you, Marcus. So hello, everybody. My name is M. Sauder. I'm the founder and cartoonist behind the website Pints and Panels, which is a drinks education website. Teaches you mostly about beer. I just started doing cocktails, spirits, and wine as well, just to strengthen the brand. I'm based in New England, so the northeastern part of the United States. And I love you, Marcus. I'm so glad that we get to chat.
Fantastic. We could stop right now. It's perfect.
Yes, we're done. We're done. See you later.
Thank you. Fantastic. Yeah, the question I had when I thought about our chat today was if I would recall myself and think, okay, what was first, drawing or drinking? I'm not really sure what I did first in my life. What about you?
I started drawing when I was 4, so I feel like drinking probably wasn't on the table until I was at least, if I can be honest, 15, 16, secretly swiping alcohol from, it's America, so you couldn't drink till you're 21, but that didn't stop us. But no, I remember really enjoying drawing when I was 4. I actually have a very core memory of drawing my first person. I was 4. I was in preschool and I had an invisible friend named Peter. Don't worry about it. And he was waiting at the bus and I drew Peter at the bus and my mom used to have it hanging in our basement. I wish she still had it, but that was 1987. Yeah. And so as long as I remember, I've been drawing, and then my style kind of evolved out of reading a lot of Archie comics when I was 11 at summer camp and then trying to draw those characters. And then it created my own style. And then I've just been drawing ever since. And it's something that I don't think I'm particularly good at. I'm not saying that to you say, oh, yes, of course you are. No. I mean, artists have limitations and I have a fair amount of them. But I really think that you can use those limitations to your advantage. And you can also, you know what you're good at. And so I can draw a pint glass. And so there we go.
Perfect. And when started the idea to do this professional, in general, drawing?
So I went to art school for 2 years, 2009, 2011. And I was in Vermont, which at the time, so this is 2010, was Hill Farmstead had just opened. There were around 2010, a lot of the breweries really were in the U.S. were big regional players. So we were only, I lived in White River Junction. The school was only a half hour to Long Trail, which is a very big brewery in Vermont, and 20 minutes to Harpoon, which has a Vermont facility as well as a Boston facility. And I spent so many hours driving to go and get growlers. I loved UFO White, which was kind of their I actually don't even know what UFO White is. It's like a US wheat ale, but it also has but it's also a wit beer. I don't really, it doesn't hit any kind of style. I haven't had it in years, but we could get a growler of it for $6. So 4 pints. And I loved going, and they had a really good restaurant. And I really, really enjoyed all the beer, especially Firestone Walker went into New Hampshire, which was right next door, I remember, in 2011. And then we had access to Dogfish Head. A lot of the beers that we were drinking, yeah, were either big guys like Dogfish Head. I mean, oh, man, I used to drink my weight in 90 minute at art school. Yeah. Especially because, it's pretty high alcohol. And, you're a poor artist. And I was driving around May 2010, and I was like, I want to do a beer website where I review beer and say what I like and what I don't like. And it was my art school boyfriend who named it Pints and Panels, actually, which was, and he was like, oh, you're going to call it Pints and Panels. And I'm very, very appreciative. I owe him multiple dinners. He's a very nice guy. But yeah, so that's where Pints and Panels started. And then it was part of my senior thesis when I graduated from the Center for Cartoon Studies. And it, you know, it was, I just kept at it. And that's the thing. I think the resilience of it and the like never giving up attitude of just reviewing, reviewing, reviewing. And then I did beer reviews for 9 years before I switched to education. And people would always say, oh, you should do education. You should do education. And I have a, you know, you can't tell people to do something until they actually want to do it. And I found that when I was studying for the Master Cicerone exam, having a visual component, which doesn't exist, it didn't exist, was incredibly helpful. And so I was like, oh, I should share these with people and put them on my website for free so other people want to study, they can. And then during COVID, it really took off because everyone was at home. And I was just so surprised at how people responded to it and really enjoyed it. And now it's my full-time job. And that is, I wake up every day thinking how lucky I am to be, one, in the beer community, which is just a fantastic place, and two, to have people really enjoy what you create. As an artist, there's no, in any kind of capacity, music, art, any cultural medium, to have people really enjoy what you do and to say, like, thank you, is, I'm getting emotional just thinking about it because I'm so happy how this has worked out. So, and then I get to judge beer competitions with you, Marcus, and we get to go all over the world and try amazing beers and seek really cool things. And it's afforded me, I mean, I'm in Italy right now for Birrifico Italiano's birthday party. And just being in that room with the founders of Italian craft beer and all they've done for Italy and being invited was, you know, it's a community I'm very happy to belong to.
And I can only say it's fantastic to have you there. But I think also I think it's so many very interesting components of the whole thing. So you started with the drawing, you fell in love with the beer, that came together, you made these wonderful beer cartoons, and you got also into having professional knowledge about beer and judging beer, and that all comes together in these great cartoons. And of course, people discover that, and the whole beer world was looking for something like that because we didn't have any visual education in that style, in that nice way. And so, of course, it took off and it's fantastic. And I can only say we use it ourselves. So it is great. And you really get to great and interesting jobs and places and things. So that's really amazing. But can you remember when you fell in love with beer?
Oh, of course. That's another core memory. It was 2006. I had Sam Adams White Ale, so their take on a wit beer, and I had never had a wit beer before. And I was at an Irish pub in Keene, New Hampshire, which is a small town in southern New Hampshire. So, like, and this is. I was a sports writer at the time, right after I graduated. That's what I thought I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a sports journalist. But the pay is awful, and sports happen at night, and I really like sleeping. So I wouldn't go to bed till like 2 a.m. every night, and it was awful. Anyway, so I ordered the Sam Adams White Ale. It came in a 25-ounce, so like well over an imperial pint. I'm trying to think. It's like 750 milliliters mug. It was $4.50. I took one sip and everything changed. I it was like religious. I'm not joking. I was like, I will devote my life to this. And it, my first book is dedicated to Sam Adams White Ale. They don't make it. It used to be their spring seasonal. They make it as White Christmas now, which is their Christmas beer. So instead of, it has nutmeg in it. So it's more like Christmassy, I guess. It's still quite good. It's on the sweet side, but I think I had 4 of them. I drank like a gallon, or I don't even know, many, many liters of that beer. And it was snowing and the Super Bowl was on. And I just remember being like, so I'm 22, right? Yeah, 2006. No, I was about to turn 23. And I knew after that, I was like, what else is, and that's the thing, when you discover a beer that you really like, you're like, oh, I like this, what else is like that? And then I had Hefeweizens, and then I had Belgian styles, other Belgian beers, or triples. I remember buying Chimay White in 2007, and it was like $11 for the 750 milliliter, and I was like, $11 for a beer? What is, but blasphemy. And I remember being like, but this is fancy and I want to try new things. And it was so good. I really, really loved how I really loved Belgians were the first kind of open gateway. And then you start getting into other styles. And then the final frontier for me, which is funny, speaking because of where you are, is I really struggled with Rauch beers until maybe pretty recently, actually. I really didn't like them. And now I really, really love them. And that's the thing that's so great about beer is that there's a beer for everyone. And, you know, people go, oh, I don't like beer. And I'm like, no, you do. there's beer that tastes like chocolate, you know, like, come on. Beer has such a wide variety of flavors, alcohol levels, styles, process, aroma. I mean, there's something for everyone. I truly believe that. I mean, he likes beer, but I actually really love that my husband doesn't also work in beer. He works with computers. And so he really wanted to be here in Italy. It didn't work out. And he does like coming to beer, but he doesn't like going to beer stuff. And it's actually really nice where I come home and we don't talk about mash pH at night. We don't talk about, I just had a breakfast with a Danish brewer and we spent the whole breakfast talking about Nelson hop selection and like timing. And that is something my husband would be like, there's a very good brewery near my house called Dead Language that's run by a husband, wife, and this guy, Chris, who owns it. And they do German, they do lean on European styles. So a lot of lager. And then some British styles as well. And we had a very long discussion about mild malt. And my husband was just like on his phone. And I was like, wait, we can't talk about this anymore. I feel bad. It's nice. It's nice, though, that like I can have someone at home who's also incredibly supportive. You know, I wasn't home last year for 4 months out of the year, even more. And I mean, we don't have kids the cats may miss me. I don't know. But I'm always like, are you cool with this? You know, I'm away. And he's like, oh, he loves it. Because then he gets the whole bed to himself. And he can eat whatever he wants for dinner. And I'm not bothering him. So, but no, he gets to drink a lot. Samples will come. I'll bring home beer. And he's always excited to try them. We have a beer fridge in our basement, where he has a shelf. He's allowed to drink anything on the shelf. And then if he touches my shelf, I will leave him. There's special beer that, you know, I was like, oh, I'm saving those, you know, like if a friend comes to visit or they're gifts for someone else, they're not for me. So he has his own beer shelf and I always make sure that it's stocked with things he really likes. He'll drink anything, actually. And yeah, again, he's incredibly supportive. To have someone in your corner that's like, no, you're doing what you want to do. I'm proud of you is really lovely. So
that's absolutely great. Yeah. What I'm also curious, you were talking about being a sports journalist. Mm-hmm. So I had a time in my life when I was a sports photographer.
Oh, really?
and I always really loved it to be directly at the court and mm-hmm. making these pictures, of course, catching the right moments, being totally close to the players in the cabin or afterwards with the parties and everything. So you're very close. You get all the emotions. And of course, you have your team. You are also supporting it. And when you are so close, that is also a great experience. And it was quite hard for me to leave that. So I'm not sad about it, but I know it was a really great time. It was great emotions and it was a big amount of fun. And in my heart, maybe I never left it completely. So what about your sports attitude? Are you still sport addicted?
Baseball is my sport. I love baseball. When the season, so the baseball season goes from March until November. So it's most of the year. I don't know. So I'm a Red Sox fan from Boston, but I'm also a New York Mets fan. That's the team I was raised on. And then I became a Red Sox fan in 2000. And the thing about becoming a Red Sox fan, it's very similar to becoming a beer person, where the game was on. It was a postseason, so the playoffs. And it was a friend of mine had put it on the TV. I was having a party at my house. And so yeah, I'm 20. Yeah, I'm 20. And I watched, there was, the game went into extra innings. So they played 9 innings and they went farther. And the one of the players, the Red Sox players, Trot Nixon, he hit a walk-off home run, which so wins the game. You walk it off. And I was like, oh, I'm a Red Sox fan for life. I don't know. Maybe I don't know what it is about. Like, there's just things in your life where you meet someone or you have something or something, you see something, and it completely changes everything in your entire worldview. And then you're like, oh, this is it. It's kind of nuts how that happens to me. Not that much, but the things that are very important to me are things where they're very big split decisions. And oh, I'm like in Italy, I haven't watched the game. I'll watch the game tonight. I watch every Red Sox game. It's something that's, baseball is, I believe firmly that everyone has what I call is a meditation. So something that makes you calm and happy. On my way to here, my flight got canceled or delayed. And so the airline put me in a 3-hour taxi to New York City to fly to Italy. And my Uber driver we had a very long discussion. He was a very nice kid. Shout out to Raymond. About he loves to ride his motorcycle and that's the thing that makes him the happiest. And I was like, oh, well, this is when I'm most happy when I'm either traveling or when I'm watching baseball. And it's something that calms you, that relaxes you, that makes you feel good. Beer does exactly the same thing. I mean, obviously it's alcohol, so there's differences. But no, I'm a real, like, I love baseball. It's something that I got to go to. Have you judged with Carlo Graciano, the Dominican judge?
I think so, yes.
So he invited me to his home in the Dominican Republic, and he took me to a Dominican baseball game. And I cried because it was so, like, it's insane how different. The game is the same, but the crowd is so loud. And there's just this, like, guy has a bucket of Presidente lagers, and they're $2 each, and they give you a napkin to hold the beer so your hand doesn't get wet, which doesn't work, but it's just very charming. And there's bottle service, so you can buy a bottle of liquor at the baseball game, and they give you a cooler and ice and mixers. And so there's people just like with bottles of Jack Daniels at the game, which is insane. And alcohol, the game went into extra innings, so it was in the 11th. But Carlo had brought a friend of his with us, and their daughter was with us, and she was like exhausted. So I was like, we got to go. And there was still a line for alcohol in America, or in the US rather. There's, you can't buy alcohol past the 7th or the 8th inning. So there's 9 innings. Not in Dominican. The game was still going on, and there was a line for drinks. And I was like, oh, wow, okay. All right. Sure.
They party the whole day. Why not?
They do. It's that Caribbean lifestyle. It's great. Oh, and yeah, the Dominican Republic, because it's fun to be able to meet people in beer and then experience their culture in beer and how beer shapes them. Because Carlo owns a brewery in Punta Cana, and so we tried all his beers and, like, learning about, you know, things that are popular, going to see you in Bamberg, and trying different beers, learning about what people like, what they don't like, what's popular. It's just such a joy, such a joy.
I can only agree. It's so great to discover the world this way, always with people which are always nice, and you are never a tourist, you're always a friend, like a family member. And this is really great. maybe back to drawing. How does a drawing start for you? Is it in your brain? Is it in your hand? Is it something that happens, or do you think about it before you start? Or
usually, so I draw on the iPad. I switched 4 years ago because I got diagnosed with wrist tendonitis, and my physical therapist was like, "You'll change the motion of your hand if you switch to the iPad," which you do. It's a different. And my art actually is an improved. To me, the work looks a lot cleaner And so I'm very happy about that. A lot of it comes when I drive, I get a lot of really good ideas. So like errand running, I'll be out doing chores or something. And then I always write it down in the notes app on my phone. I have a note that's just like ideas to draw. And either I get too excited and I'll push everything I was supposed to do and work on it. And then I'll post it immediately. I'm an incredibly impatient person. I work incredibly fast, mostly because I'm like, what's next? What's next? What's next? I can't help myself. That's just how I've always worked. I'm trying to be more patient.
That's a tough thing.
I don't know if we'll ever get it. We'll see. So yeah, normally I'll draw, when I travel, like I have a travel iPad, that I work with when I travel, so I can draw anywhere. It's smaller. And then I'll work on that. And then I upload it to Photoshop where I clean it up. And then my website has a backlog, just so I always have stuff at the ready of like 6 or 7 months of things that are already done. So there's so much work that's already, there's thousands upon thousands of things I've drawn. Or maybe not thousands and thousands, a lot. Let's just say a lot. And it's great. I mean, that's normally how it works. So I'll think of an idea, write it down, or immediately if I'm home, draw it and then upload it, clean it up, and then either post it immediately because I'm like, this is too good an idea. I love it. I'm so happy with it. Conversations also with brewer friends or people will inspire. I was talking to a friend who owns a brewery in New Hampshire, my friend Mike, and I was like, these are the things industry people want in brewing. And I just like rattled them off and I was like, oh, I have to draw that. And so it's really nice to be inspired by brewery or industry friends. I love when people have suggestions. Some of the best, the past 2 years, the Guinness blends was actually a suggestion from a follower who's like, you've never done this before, you should do it. And it gets a lot of likes. Most anything Guinness related does, but because it's so popular nowadays. But it's really cool also how things are labeled. Beer is so culturally, I mean, it's beer. It's so only, you know, a few ingredients, but things are labeled differently other places. And Pints and Panels has a pretty global audience. 55% of my followers are outside the United States. So there are things they call it that like a snake bite. So going back to Guinness blends, a snake bite in the United States is Guinness and hard cider. But a snake bite in the UK is Guinness, hard cider and lager. And so all the comments are like, you're wrong. And I'm like, I'm not wrong. I always something that I have to check myself is my work actually leans on an American bias just because I am from the United States. I don't mean to. But I also think there are a lot of right answers in beer. There, how many ways can you brew a porter and it's still a porter? So it's fun to have conversations with people and they're like, oh, where I live, we call it this, or these are the styles that are really popular. In Italy, I'm here now. They love Bock beer. And that is just so charming to me because we don't do Bocks really in the United States. It's not a style. Czech beers right now are having a huge moment. British styles, kind of a throwback 90s thing going on right now in the United States is amber ale, the resurgence of amber ale of all styles, which is, yeah, sure, why not? But it's fun to see when you go to a different country, like, how do you make... I'm from New England, the originator of the New England IPA, and I have a way we make our New England IPAs, especially in New England, they're pretty sweet and full. But when you go other places, in Italy, for example, they're quite dry, or usually dry. I judged the medal round last year at Beer Del Anno. And then same thing on the West Coast, the hazy IPAs tend to be drier and more bitter. But they're still hazy IPAs. So there's a lot of right answers in beer, I think.
Yeah, I think that is a main topic I really always have in the discussions at competitions, because especially if you have younger judges or inexperienced judges, they turn to see the world in black and white. So like, this is a right porter, this is a wrong porter. And but in fact, if you look really at it, there's a lot of yeses and a lot of white or a lot of gray, whatever. So you cannot really say it's like this 100% that or 0% that. It's a lot of things in between. And I tend to almost never say this is totally wrong or you are wrong or something like that, because it's not like that. There is a truth in many, many things, and so it can be so diverse inside a style or inside a beer idea or whatever, so that I think if you have people from different cultures and different countries, they all have their personal bias, their experience. And for them, if something is right, you cannot say it's wrong. It's just their experience. It's a different way to maybe see some beer styles or whatever things. And then you can talk about it. What is maybe the historic idea, or what is the idea of the competition, or what is maybe my personal idea, whatever. But that doesn't exclude the other idea that's also has its right to exist. So I think we also learn a lot of respect and being respectful with each other, and to discover that the world is maybe diverse in the people, but in the end, we're all humans, most of us liking beer. So that's maybe unites us. Talking about that, maybe you also work a lot internationally. And what I really was adoring was that you made a Duvel glass some months ago. Maybe you can tell us a little bit as an example also how that came, and how you then designed it, and how it was the moment you had it in your hands first time.
Yeah, so I know the rep and the beer educator for Duvel is a guy, James Tai, and I do some events for them in New York City. And I got an email from this guy, Brian Reams, who's the chief marketing officer of Duvel USA. So they're based at Boulevard in Kansas City. And every year they do a different artist glass that's a special edition. It's either available. They just put it on the Duvel. You can buy it at the Duvel shop in Belgium. I know this because someone showed a picture of it. And then I believe you can buy it online because people were asking. And they emailed me and they were like, oh, okay. Like, we would love. And it was just such an honor to work with them. And it was fun. I actually designed a different glass, which was dogs and cats drinking together in a Belgian beer cafe.
Wow.
And I was like, this is what I want. Because it was actually right after the 2024 election. And I kind of wanted to, like, beer brings us together. Like, let's not lose sight of what's more important. And so I drew this kind of, dogs and cats living together, you know, from the Ghostbusters movie. Anyway, but they were like, but you're a beer educator. This doesn't educate. And I was like, no, let me draw animals.
It does educate.
Yeah, it was really charming. But the Belgians really wanted something educational, and they had an idea in their head. So I was like, of course, whatever. And I'm really happy with how it turned out. It looks really, really nice. They threw a party for the glass in New York City, and I got to hold it for the first time and drink I had one too many Duvels, I'll just say. And I remember being on the subway home back to my hotel in Times Square, holding the box that I designed with the glass I designed from Duvel, like, in my lap, and just thinking I have not, the thing is, I've not seen it in the wild. Like, I never saw it in a shop. Then my local stores in Connecticut didn't carry it. They had it at Whole Foods and some other shops, but I never got to see it in the wild. But I loved when people sent me photos of it in shop windows. And I have a friend in New York City. He'd be like, it's at this bodega in, you know, 2nd and, you know, I don't even, like, 32nd Street. And I was like, okay, cool. On the Lower East Side. And I think that's, people were really responding to it. They really enjoyed it. So that's how it came about. And it took, they emailed me a year before it came out. So there was a year, and then it came out in the fall of last year. And I put two in my suitcase. So I had one, I gave one to my mother, and then I have the other one. So.
Yeah, I think for me, this must be really a big, big goosebump moment. So also, if you think a little bit back, that you have maybe the first day you started to drinking beer and drawing beer and starting in the beer world and starting traveling beer, starting doing competitions, whatever, and ending up with doing a beer glass for one of the iconic, most iconic Belgian beer companies. And it goes on and on and on. And I think this is, as you said in the beginning, this is a very special thing to look back to your life and see how things evolved. And you immediately always have a feedback. I think that must make you happy, as you said. So
It really does. It's a joy to spend time with people in the industry. It's fun to become friendly with people that I looked up to when I first started drinking and beer. I just met Eric Toft, who's the brewer at Schoenrammer. I had never met him before, and I've heard him on podcasts and just having, you know, getting to like hug him at breakfast this morning. I was like, oh, wow. Like, and drinking Schoenrammer pills with him last night. Yvonne DeBitz from Brasserie de la Seine was here, and he was like, oh, let's talk about cats some more. And I was like, of course, let's talk. He loves cats. I love cats. And we talked about Cézanne, and it's really great to spend time in the industry and realize how nice everyone is and how passionate and how, for the most part, I mean, not everyone is, you know, nice. There's some bad apples out there. But at the same time, like most of the time, they're so passionate about beer and they are so excited and they want to share their excitement with you. And I get to do that with people all over the world. And I love when people message me on Instagram or email me from my website and just ask me questions or, you know, I'm going to blank. Do you have any recommendations on where to drink or where to eat? And I always do. I love making sure that I have lots of notes from every city that I visit. And it's a joy to share beer with people. It really is.
And talking about educational drawing, is it like a shift when you start drawing, let's say, normally what you always drew at the beginning, and then to think of, okay, now I have a special message and I want to transport this, and how can I translate that into my drawing? Or is it also something that just comes out of your head and then you start doing it?
The way that I draw now is it's not cohesive. So it's a lot of little mini parts. So you'll draw things and then you build everything in Photoshop. And so I had to kind of, in cartooning school, they teach you, you know, about panel borders and drawing cartoons and, you know, spacing and all that stuff. But now everything's kind of, especially the educational component of it, everything's very disjointed and then you build. And I've been drawing that way probably since I started doing beer education stuff. So 7 years ago. And it's not like it doesn't look as pretty as a complete drawing, but when you get to build something and it looks really nice, I'm really happy when people, you know, see the work and respond to it. And drawing normally and drawing educationally are the same thing because I don't normally, you know, I'm not drawing seascapes or, you know, stuff like that. I do a lot of commissions, so I'll do like portraits. I'm doing the someone's wedding coaster and save the date for their wedding. I love doing small stuff like that, and I try to keep my prices really reasonable so the drawing can be accessible. I know art, you know, can be expensive. It takes a lot of time, and a lot, you know, but I want to make sure that if people want the art, that I can make it accessible. So it's fun to do things outside of beer that, you know, maybe are beer adjacent, like, you know, the wedding, they'll be holding little beers. But at the same time, it's so fun to, you know, I draw a lot of like architectural, like homes for people, like childhood homes or their favorite bar or, you know, any, I mean, I did a guy had a crazy dream and he's like, will you draw my crazy dream? And I was like, yeah, sure, man.
Oh, it gets therapeutical.
Yeah. There was like a bunch of basketball players. It was like, it was really fun to be like, okay, this is weird, but this is exciting. You know, like that people want what I do and really enjoy it. It makes me very, very happy.
Okay, last question. Now you're going beyond beer, so like cocktails, like spirits and all these things, both in drawing and also in judging and experiencing. So how is that for you, and will it be the thing next to beer or something like an equal beer, equal thing, or what do you think?
I mean, beer is always the thing I'm known for, so most people respond to that. But it's been really fun and joyful to do others, you know, spirits. I'm actually working, my fifth book will be a whiskey book. I'm working on it right now with Lou Bryson, who's a very well-known American whiskey writer. He's writing it. I'm drawing it. I'm going to be very, very busy. Wine, I really enjoy how complex and confusing wine is. It's very geographical. It's very local. It's very, you know, I was at lunch 2 days ago in Milan, and the guy walked me through all the white wines they had by the glass. And he was like, oh, this one's from an hour away. This is from Lugano. This is from Trieste. This is from, you know, and in Italy, the wine is so connected to place and where people are from. And I mean, beer is the same way, but beer can be made all over. You know, I've had hazy IPAs in South America, Australia, you know, South Africa. But I really like how wine can really only be tied to one place to be one thing. And the geography, the sense of place is really exciting, but it's also really confusing. And so I get to be a new learner again and try really hard to make sure that I get everything right. I'm starting to know a lot of people in the wine world, and they're very, very helpful. They're just as nice as beer people. Wine has such a reputation of being this like snobby, fancy drink, but the people in the wine industry they're very nice and very cool. And so it's been exciting to kind of peek into that world a little and learn as much as I can. And just to try to advance the brand, you know, get Pints and Panels out from beer. The cocktail world is really, really cool. I went to a really great cocktail bar in Milan called Mobius, which is this, according to World's Best, is the seventh best cocktail bar in the world. And that was like, you know, that sounds very, you know, like fancy. And it was fancy. It's a Michelin star restaurant, which is wild. But, you know, every bartender there was, you know, was excited. And they wanted to, you know, I was like, hey, can we go off menu? Can you make me something like this? And the bartender was like, oh, let's go, you know? And they were really excited about being able to create something. Because cocktails are incredibly, incredibly creative. And I really enjoyed my time there. I was there way longer than I should have been. And it was very charming. And it was lovely.
Perfect. So now I have a plan when you come back to Bamberg, because we have a great cocktail bar, which is also amongst the best in the country. And they have a special cocktail, which is more or less like a whiskey sour, but it looks like a beer.
Oh.
And you will love it. So we will do that.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
So thank you very much for your time.
Of course.
And of course, I wish you a great day today with a lot of great beers and wines and cocktails and. And thank you very much again, and see you soon.
Okay. Cheers. Thanks, Marcus.
Beer Talk, der Podcast rund ums Bier. Alle Folgen unter www.biertalk.de.